Ave and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast series looking at the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode XVI, Claudius, the Unlikely Emperor. With Caligula's brief rule leaving the Julio-Claudians in a sorry state, the candidates for the next emperor were a bit thin on the ground. So, almost by default, it went to the person who never thought he'd find himself in that position. Caligula's forgotten uncle, Claudius. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Claudius was born in Gaul in 10 BCE. He's part of the imperial family. Obviously, Augustus is emperor at this point. Augustus has been in power since 27 BCE. He's his great-uncle.
Great-uncle.
Augustus' wife, Livia, is his grandmother. So he's firmly sealed within that family. His grandmother on the other side is Octavia, who is the sister of Augustus. And his grandfather on that side is Mark Antony. So it's pretty prestigious stock. He's born in Gaul because his father, Drusus, who's Livia's son, is on campaign much of the time. He was very well liked at Drusus, very well regarded for being a popular and successful military figure. And he's the father of Germanicus, who, as we already know, is incredibly popular. Claudius's sister was Livilla, who you might remember if you listened to the podcasts on Tiberius, was having an affair with Sejanus. And that led to a conspiracy against Tiberius, and Sejanus was executed because of it. So you'd think that Claudius, being the son of one of these popular figures and the brother of another, would also be wildly popular. But he's sort of kept secret within the family. They're a bit ashamed of him, it seems, in the early years.
This was because of a physical disability, isn't it?
It's because of a physical disability and a speech impediment. He seems to have had a stutter and he limped. And that's all that Suetonius tells us.
Is there speculation as to...
Lots of speculation.
Lots of speculation.
About birth defects of various kinds. But it seems that the imperial family regarded him as mentally deficient because of this speech impediment, which doesn't seem to be true by any of the evidence we have. He was actually a very good scholar.
How is this sort of disability regarded then? You say he was kept hidden.
It's something to be ashamed of, and yeah. It's something that he was humiliated for. There are actually quite sad stories in Suetonius and elsewhere that he would come into the dining room and he'd be sort of pelted with food, or he used to fall asleep because apparently he drank too much, and then they'd just sort of throw olives at him to wake him up, or put a feather in his mouth so he'd choke when he woke up. We would feel really sorry for Claudius these days, but disability was not regarded in the same way in antiquity. And it's possible, depending on how severe his disability was, that if he hadn't been born into the imperial family or a high-born aristocratic family, that he would have been very simply exposed at birth. This didn't always happen, but it's not something that's uncommon in antiquity. They're not very sentimental. A lot of babies die anyway. And if you can't afford to bring up a child who won't be able to participate in whatever farming or other activity you do, then you might decide not to bring it up at all.
I've got here that his mother, Antonia, referred to him as a monster. Mm. This is from Dio.
She seems to have been very unsympathetic. This is Antonia, who's called Antonia because she's the daughter of Mark Antony. She seems to have largely ignored him. His father died when he was quite young, so his father's not around. Livia also kind of humiliated him in public, regarded him as a bit of a liability. This is his grandmother. And we have letters quoted from Augustus and Livia saying things like, oh, what are we going to do with Claudius? Do we let him come to this particular public ceremony? Do we let him sit with us at the games? Clearly trying to judge whether they think Claudius will make them look bad or not. He only gets left, I think it's a sixth of the amount that the other siblings do in his father's will and in Livia's will. So he's clearly not being regarded as at the same level and not somebody that you put on show to the public.
So with this kind of regard and neglect, I take it he isn't destined for a life in politics or anything of high-ranking nature. So where does that leave him?
He's very much left out of that political and military sphere. So the Augustan family pushes forward most of their young male children and they give them magistracies way before the age they should. But Augustus doesn't even put Claudius in the Senate. He seems to have adopted a very scholarly life, and he is known to have associated with, perhaps been a pupil of, the historian Livy, who wrote the entire history of Rome in 142 books.
Wow. I take it we don't have those, do we?
We don't have all of them. We have the first 10 and then some after that.
First 10.
We have the history of the Carthaginian Wars against Hannibal from Livy, so we should be grateful. But he hung out with Livy, which is probably an important influence on him. And apparently Livy encouraged him to write history, and he did just that. He wrote a history of the time of Julius Caesar and the civil wars.
That's really quite recent history.
It's reasonably recent history. Yeah. And Suetonius mentions that he actually kind of self-censored. He sort of moved ahead a bit because the civil wars were a touchy subject, presumably because there were still figures who would have been on the other side, who weren't happy with the outcome. He wrote something that we really would like to have. Well, I guess we'd like to have all of these, which is an account of and a history of the Etruscans, who were the group of Italians who were really powerful before the Romans started on their rise to power. And now the Etruscans seem quite mysterious to us. We have artifacts of theirs and we have their writing, but we can't really decipher it very easily. But Claudius wrote this history of Etruria, and he wrote various other histories and accounts that would be great to have. We don't have any of them. But we do know that he was spending his time carrying out these scholarly activities, and apparently his writing was quite good.
So he was well regarded?
He was.
Is that amongst the imperial family or amongst his peers and fellow scholars?
Suetonius, who would have had access to all of this, says that the writing is of good quality. And he also says that Augustus was quite surprised at how good this was and kind of started to reevaluate Claudius, not to the extent that he made him a public figure in any kind, but just, you know, he's not as much of a fool as we took him for kind of level.
Did he ever show any political ambition at this time? Do we know much about his life?
Apparently he was quite frustrated that he wasn't being put forward for public life, but any ambition he had was just quashed. He wasn't enrolled in the Senate. He wasn't given magistracies.
So given the treatment of Claudius, I gather that there was never an intention for him to be political in any sort of way. But how did that change once Caligula became emperor?
Caligula favoured him and brought him into high office and made him co-consul with Caligula himself. And it's really unclear why this was. Of course, we know that Caligula was quite unpredictable. It may have been that he just wanted to favour somebody who was close in his family.
Is it likely that he was just trying to ridicule everything, just slightly undermining it in his, you know, making a horse a consul kind of way?
It could be part of that, if you buy that idea that Caligula is just kind of taking the mickey out of the whole system. We don't know. We aren't given any rationale for it. Indeed, it's very hard to find rationales with Caligula. He's not setting him up to be the next emperor, because you don't do that. You set up the next generation, except there isn't really a next generation because Caligula's so young.
But making him co-consul is, even if it's a backhanded one, it's definitely a vote of confidence.
It is. I mean, it may be that he thinks Claudius is harmless and isn't going to exert any power because he doesn't sort of have a power base. So that may be the reason. But whatever the reason is, it then brings Claudius to public attention. And it's certainly saying, I'm prepared to have this man around me in this position of power.
Does he get more respect, or is he still ridiculed?
Apparently continues to be ridiculed a certain amount. There are some really, as I said, some very sad stories in the biography of Claudius. And yeah, you get the idea that there's still people whispering behind his back and making fun of him throughout his life, pretty much, while he's still emperor. One result of being left out of positions of power is that he has more of an association with the second tier of Roman power, the equestrians. And this probably has an ongoing effect, because the equestrians aren't meant to be very powerful. They're meant to carry out kind of quite practical roles. But the fact that they had given honours to Claudius before he came to power meant that he was quite likely to foster them once he got to power. So unknowingly, the equestrians had actually done something which would increase their own prestige and power and really annoy the Senate.
So when Caligula, his nephew, was assassinated, what do we know about his, maybe not his role in it, because I assume he didn't have any direct role in it, but did he know about it? Did he know that something was going to happen?
There's no suggestion that Claudius had any part or knowledge of the conspiracy and assassination. But there is a funny story that he was hiding in the palace once he heard that this had happened, and he's just sort of hiding to try not to be discovered, but he is discovered by a soldier. And the soldier decides this is going to be the new emperor. And if that is true, then that means that the army is now making that decision. The Senate doesn't really have any part of this. Even the imperial family hasn't made that decision. It's not as if this person was being fostered as the heir.
Mm.
In fact, he's the least likely to succeed.
And he's actually taken away from Rome until things calm down, isn't he?
Yeah, he's kept away from the danger and then kind of brought back as emperor.
And is it a decision that the Senate endorsed or one that they more so had to live with?
Well, it's interesting because our sources sort of say that the Senate starts debating whether this is the moment. That moment when an emperor dies is always the possible moment when the Senate could snatch back power. And ancient historians debate when this idea that an emperor dying means the Republic could return ends. But Suetonius and Dio both suggest that the Senate really thought about it because there isn't anybody obvious. You know, Caligula only has a baby daughter.
And she's killed.
Yeah, she's killed in the kind of massacre that follows. But the Senate just dragged its feet and they didn't do enough to, if they really were planning that, they didn't do enough to stop Claudius coming back and claiming power. However, certainly at the beginning, Claudius may have been reasonably popular just because he wasn't Caligula.
So once he becomes the emperor, how does Claudius deal with the people who murdered his nephew?
He's actually fairly reluctant to do anything very much about it. He executes the kind of immediately responsible, but he doesn't do what the Senate seems to want, which is to declare Caligula persona non grata, to get rid of all of his images, to have that what they call the rubbing out of his memory, the damnatio memoriae.
I wonder if his reaction to that, that he won't rub out Caligula, is maybe some sort of influence from his time as a historian. As in, no, you don't deny history. It happened.
I like that idea. I mean, I guess I've always thought it's because Caligula, for all of his crazy evil, was still the son of Claudius's brother, Germanicus. But also, it's quite pragmatic because he is part of this imperial family. He's only there because he's a Julio-Claudian, and you get the feeling he wants to start his reign in a more positive way.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University, and you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. So if you like this podcast, please subscribe to it on iTunes, leave us a review, or at the very least, a little star rating. You can like us on Facebook, or follow us both on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, we'll look at Claudius's greatest military victory, the conquest of Britain. Until then, I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.